Today on Straight Talk Africa, the new kid on the block in Ethiopia is Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. He appears to be drawing traction with most of his compatriots. Observers say the 42-year-old former senior military officer's political catchphrase seems to be keeping hope alive. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick. I'll be your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion and analysis on the challenges and opportunities regarding the political transition in Ethiopia.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments. We're going to reveal some of them ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
After years of turmoil, many Ethiopians are daring to believe a new wave of hope is making its way to the Eastern African country. My colleague Francisco has more.
The East African country remains in a state of emergency following a years-long crackdown on opposition political activity. The announcement of another state of emergency came one day after former Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn resigned. Ethiopia is crucial to the stability of East Africa. It has the region's largest army, the continent's fastest-growing economy, and it is surrounded by disenfranchised states, including Somalia, Sudan, and South Sudan, and Eritrea. It is a highly centralized state with only the ruling party and its allies in parliament. On April 10th, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a resolution urging the Ethiopian government to increase its respect for human rights and the rule of law. Human rights groups say security forces have killed hundreds of activists, protesters, and dissident journalists, jailing many thousands more. In the last year, the ruling parties also released thousands of political prisoners, closed the notorious Makalela prison, and changed its leadership, replacing Haile Mariam Desalegn with now Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. The 42-year-old took office on April 2nd. Iskender Nega is a journalist and one of the recently released political prisoners. Nega spent more than 6 years in jail, has been in and out 8 times, and was convicted by the government of treason and terrorism.
Well, this is an African prison, so you could guess how it would be. But overall, I think the objective of the imprisonment was more than physical imprisonment. The object is to break the spirit, and that was not specifically against me, but against all prisoners, particularly political prisoners. And in the final analysis, it did not happen. That's why I'm sitting here.
He confirms the frequent use of torture by prison authorities and that tens of thousands of others were also jailed.
Like you said, I was in prison 8 times, and during those times, there were times when I was tortured. So there is torture in Ethiopia's prisons.
The new prime minister hails from the Oromo community. Violent protests by the Oromos, Ethiopia's largest ethnic group, and persistent unrest from the Amharas, the second largest ethnic community, continue, even as the new prime minister travels the region calling for unity and promising reforms. Zaid Raad Al Hussein is the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights.
Well, it's unlikely in any transition for it to be smooth. There will always be bumps in the road. There may be setbacks. There's a sense of great anticipation, but maybe trepidation as well. And so hope comes with a little anxiety.
Human rights groups routinely accuse Ethiopia of clamping down on opposition candidates and supporters as well as journalists by using anti-terrorism laws to silence dissent and jail government critics. Meanwhile, there is cautious optimism, strife, and a glimmer of hope in East Africa and with the Ethiopian diaspora that maybe the time for change has come, even as returning drought, combined with the displacement of hundreds of thousands, have put millions of Ethiopians in desperate need of food aid. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in the studio are two distinguished guests. Solomon Abate, VOA's Horn of Africa reporter. Professor Burihanu Nega, chairman of the Patriotic Gene Board 7, and Eskinder Nega, an Ethiopian independent journalist, is expected to be joining us shortly. On a programming note, we requested the Ethiopian ambassador to the United States to participate in today's program, but due to scheduling conflicts, he was not able to join us. Well, I have to say, gentlemen, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thanks for having me, Shaka. This is the second time in what, in 10 years that we're having this conversation?
Well, in fact, I think the third time probably.
The third is it? Oh, yeah, one was once on the phone.
Except that the last time, of course, is very, very, very far back.
Yeah.
Sure. You're most welcome to Washington.
Thank you very much.
Well?
Thank you, Shaka, for inviting me to take part on your show here, Straight Talk Africa, for the second time. It has been exactly 91 days since I first appeared on this show.
Very interesting. You are, you know, I should be the one actually remembering those particular details, especially because I have the honor to host King Solomon himself.
Thank you very much, and you are a brother of the king.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we will give you, our audience, a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come back to you immediately, King Solomon. What is the latest from Addis Ababa?
Well, the latest from Addis Ababa looks the bright days are ahead to come. And I'm very happy to sit here with Dr. Burhanu Naga in this studio, alive, safe, because he is one of those who were charged or who were sentenced to death in absentia by Ethiopian courts. So now it seems like things are changing. A lot has changed since that day, the first time I appeared on your show, Shaka. There is a new party leader in the country who by default became prime minister of the country. And this new prime minister, who looks change-oriented and an agent of change as well, is selling his ideas to the country. He's traveling throughout the country and in neighboring countries as well. And giving some hope, sowing some hope. And these days, the country looks, you know, like as a kettle that is cooling down.
What makes him particularly different from the individual that he replaced? Because there are some people who actually say that, after all, this is one dictator replacing another.
Well, I would like to give facts only. I don't want to give any comments or my personal opinion on this. But
what about the facts on the ground?
Yeah, the you know, the opposition and many out there criticize those governments for gripping power for years and years and dictate their own ideas only, you know. Instead of serving the people, they rather run to govern by the rule of from up to down,
okay,
from above to down. But this prime minister is promising to change that atmosphere now. He promised to widen the political space. He has been inviting the opposition parties to get back to the country and participate. Even he doesn't call the opposition parties opposition. He's calling them as alternative or competitive.
Competitors.
Yeah.
Not enemies.
Not enemies. He's not calling them even opposition, you know.
So he's pretty much reaching out to them.
He's trying, from what we have been seeing since the day he was elected as the leader of his own party.
Talk to us about what happened yesterday, Sorma, because there is something particularly big, I think, that actually happened.
Yeah, yesterday was really one of the remarkable days in the last 27 years, we may say. Some 576 prisoners were released, and one of those prisoners was Andargacho Sege, also known or called as Andy, mm-hmm. a colleague of Dr. Brahanu Naga,
right,
who
here.
Was a secretary general, a founder and secretary general of Gumboot 7.
And this Gumboot is a man, of course, who was essentially locked up back in 2014, correct?
Exactly, exactly. He was abducted from Yemen, from Sana'a Airport, and mm-hmm. taken back to the country by Ethiopian security agents from there. And for some time, even, nobody knew where he was.
Now, what was the main reason why he was released, really? Because it looks like they say that, the government says that it's because of, quote, unique circumstances. Mm-hmm. What does this mean?
Well,
was pardoned because of unique circumstances.
Yeah, you know, we will have to work on that to get more explanation from the authorities, from the Attorney General himself, what that means. But normally, in Ethiopia, there are prisoners who are labeled as criminals. And there are prisoners who are labeled as prisoners of conscience by opposition parties or fighters for human rights. Mm-hmm. So,
but the
according to the Ethiopian...
The government regarded Andy, in their words, not mine, as a terrorist.
Yes, he was charged as a terrorist, and he was charged as a person who was attempting to overthrow the constitutional system, which equates to treason, high treason. That's why he was sentenced to death. In this case, Andy or others were criminals by the definition of the government, by the definition
of
the law.
That reminds me of South Africa during the apartheid. It used to look at the ANC as a terrorist organization.
That's right.
And therefore, people like, of course, Madiba, Nelson Mandela, mm-hmm. were terrorists. Mm-hmm. But when they released Nelson Mandela and unbanned the ANC and what have you, it was no longer, it ceased to be a terrorist organization. Does this mean, therefore, that this gentleman, Andy, right now, his association, for example, is it the Gumboot 7? Does it mean that it is no longer a terrorist organization in the eyes of the authorities in Addis Ababa?
Dr. Brahanu might help me in answering to this question, but Dr. Brahanu Naga, Andy, and their party, Gumboot 7, were labeled as terrorist organization by the parliament of the country. So what is coming? We shall see. What does the Andy's release and pardoning imply? Does that mean Andy is no more a terrorist? That does mean Brahanu Naga is no more a terrorist? That does mean Gumboot 7 is no more a terrorist? We will have to work on that to get the answer. But I don't know how Gumboot 7 and Dr. Brahanu gets that.
It is very interesting, and of course we will come to that a little bit later, because right now time happens not to be our best ally. When I'm told that I can continue, you know, there is no democracy in Studio 47. Just like on a military parade, when a drill sergeant says left turn, you have turned left without questions, and so does the job, of course, of the producer. Let me come to you immediately, Professor Negga. What about you? What are your immediate real feelings about the release of your comrade? Is this a significant positive step in the right direction?
Well, you know, obviously we are all pleased. It's not just us. Anyone who saw what was going on in Addis yesterday when he was released, the thousands and thousands of people who came out to receive him and to claim that he's their hero.
He pretty much was regarded as a hero.
Absolutely.
Certainly not
and he
a terrorist.
Is. No, of course he's not. You know Africa. I mean, in Africa, a terrorist is someone who opposes the government. I mean, there is no clearly defined and legitimate definition of what a terrorist actually means. A terrorist can be a journalist who writes something that the government doesn't like. A terrorist can be a legal opposition party member who just simply happened to be seen as a threat by the ruling regime. So nobody is serious about any of these labels. I mean, it's...
You're basically talking about an environment really where the state does not really feel that an individual has a right to own an opinion,
yep.
Especially if it happens to be a different type of opinion.
Yeah, what you have is a bunch of illegitimate governments whose purpose in life is to stay in power no matter what and to garner whatever resources they could get by using state power as a mechanism to seek rent for their own personal well-being. When you have these kinds of people running a state, when you have a state or a government whose focus, whose main purpose is to stay in power no matter what, whether it comes at the expense of abusing a whole population, whether it comes at the expense of torturing people and maiming people and killing them on the streets for the simple task of asking their basic rights, and when truth becomes the primary victim, when the media, the official government media, which of course other medias will not be allowed in this kind of environment unless otherwise they cater to the lines of the government, when the media, as a matter of course, talks about absolute falsehood, manufactured stories, whether it is on economic issues about, you know, how great economic performances, whether it is about politics, talking about democracy where everybody knows that there is no democracy, talking about parliament. I mean, he talked about, for example, parliament that declared these organizations terrorists. Nobody in Ethiopia believes that there is a really meaningful parliament. I mean, because it is just simply a one-party rubber-stamp parliament. There is no debate, there is no discussion, there is no... So in an environment of total, you know, absolute totalitarian rule, the victim is not just the total population. The victim is truth. The victim is the way people think. The victim is independence of thought. You know, these are states who claim to know what you think and to tell you what you should and you should not think. I think that is what has really turned this continent, you know, the miserable continent of the world as we see it now. It is because, you know, probably the most important resource of any society
but
is its people.
But what about some of their supporters who say, wait a minute, Professor Negga, these are some individuals, in their view, not mine, who happen to be uniquely gifted.
Which in all the ruling regime?
The leaders of some of these liberation groups, hey. And what have you. When you look at these liberation groups' manifesto, including, of course, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, you will see that they claim to be fighting for social economic justice for everybody.
Is this the first time that you have seen sycophants of dictatorships? I mean, there were people who thought Hitler was the greatest gift to the people of Germany. I mean, there are people who thought Mussolini was, you know, a fantastic leader. I mean, Stalin was considered to be one of the greatest leaders of his era. There are sycophants, there are opportunists who would give you these stories about these leaders. And in Africa, that's what you see, right? Almost every leader is a great leader. You know, it's a gift for its people. It is as if it is he or she is anointed by God to serve the... Hey, we know this is rubbish. Now, I think by the 21st century, playing this game is nonsense. Actually, it is making our life, both in my case in our country, but in the continent in general, even more miserable, because it defies any logic. It prohibits any honest discussion, honest conversation about the problems of a country. I am not suggesting that every problem Africa faces is a problem related to the leaders. But 70-80% of all our problems are related to the nature of governance in the continent. When you have a situation where people, which are, in my view, more than any natural resource, the most important resource a society has, when you have a society that is not using this resource effectively because it muzzles them, it prohibits them to think independently about even their own economic well-being. When you have that, you have wasted your most important resource. And African regimes are actually wasting the most important resource that the continent has. So I think it is really high time where we sit down and rethink this whole thing. And I think in our case, at least in Ethiopia, this continuous refusal by the public that they are not willing to live in this kind of humiliation. They are not willing to live in fear in their own country. They are not going to live in their own country as if they are foreign citizens that can be kicked around at will by the regime, as if they are colonized by some power, some force that would not allow them to exercise their basic rights. People have said, enough. I mean, we are done with this. I mean, Ethiopia is a country with long civilization. Ethiopia has self-rule for so long that most African countries that got their independence in the last 50, 60 years are much ahead of us in terms of, how they govern themselves. So this humiliation has led to people to say, enough is enough. And so this struggle for the last 3-4 years where people say, you can kill me, you can do whatever you want, but I am not willing to live like this anymore. I need to be a citizen. I need to have my rights. I need to consider this my state, my country. That is what put this humongous pressure in the ruling party, because otherwise, the country was going to go up in smokes. So I think some reasonably intelligent people within the ruling party woke up to the fact that this cannot continue, and they have started opening the political space. We'll see where how far they are going to take it. But what I am essentially suggesting to you is this presumption that there are certain uniquely gifted people who have a unique view of what the right form of government is, that nobody else in their country is endowed with. That rubbish has to end. We all have to be humble enough to know we don't know. We really don't know. You don't have these kinds of social experiments where certain people have absolute knowledge. Look at what happened in the last 30 years. We gave our economies to the international financial institutions, and after 30 years, where are we? This assumption that technicians, there are people who know, even more than the people.
Are you talking about the Britain?
The Britain institutions, absolutely.
The IMF and the World Bank.
Yeah, this standard assumption that there are certain people who know. There is no such a thing. I think we have to be humble enough to know that at the end of the day, what people decide is in their interest is the right policy. Yes, we have to debate. Yes, we have to negotiate. Yes, we have to explain to the public what would be the best policy in relation to their own interests. But at the end of the day, we have to be willing to accept the only right thing is what people in a free and fair election choose their policy, their preferred policies. That is what we have to come to terms with in Africa, this presumption that there is some knowledgeable guy or group of guys who would tell us which way.
I know that the last time you were very critical of the former Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, you said that he did not actually have real power because he was not a member of the TPLF, nor was he, in fact, a member of their military. What about Abiy Ahmed? Is he for real?
I don't think I have ever seriously criticized Haile Mariam because I know he has no power to criticize. I mean, he's just doing whatever he was told by the TPLF elites who have both the political and military security apparatus and who are running the show, including the predominant part of this looting that was taking place in the country. It was a typical TPLF thing. And, you know, what is interesting in the last year is this understanding, this realization that it cannot go on like this, created a rebellion within the ruling coalition itself, within the EPRDF, especially the Oromos and the Amhara, start saying, you know, enough is enough. We cannot continue like this. So when they decided that we have to change course, of course, they met this resistance within the ruling party, and there was quite a bit of struggle within them, and they won. The Abiy, unlike Haile Mariam, who was just put by the TPLF as a caretaker, while there is this deep state behind that was running the show, these people, at least politically, they have won the fight within the EPRDF, and they have said, we need to change complete course. So they are much more empowered politically than Haile Mariam ever was.
And apparently they also have the rank and file in the military.
Look, 70% of the Ethiopian army is composed of Tigrayans and Oromos and Amharas.
And Amhara.
And any attempt to push this military to to wage any kind of counter-revolution is going to be a very, very dangerous enterprise.
So you really think that Prime Minister Ahmed is for real?
I believe, let me put it this way. The degree to which these reform-minded people who are coming within the party are willing to go all the way in terms of the democratization process, the degree to which they are committed to that is not yet clear because we haven't seen any meaningful practical steps. Very clearly, they are real in terms of beating the TPLF and that hegemony. And I think they have succeeded to a certain degree, although there are still pockets within the state that are still dominated by them.
Last time you had problems with, of course, the state of emergency. You actually said that it wasn't really a state of emergency. It was simply an opportunity for the military to take over. Do you still believe that we are actually looking at a military government in Addis Ababa?
No, by definition, it's a military government. It's a state of emergency. A state of emergency essentially says all constitutional rights are abrogated, and it is the so-called, what they call the command post, is the one that is running the show. So that's one of the reasons why we say we need to see that Abiy and his company are for real. And the way they show us that they are for real is by taking some serious action, such as lifting the state of emergency. In the absence of that, civilized politics is not possible.
But in terms of rhetoric, at least he has said, for example, that democracy cannot be realized in the absence of rights, be it civil or economic rights. We all need to have a platform to voice our concerns.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's right. That's why we are all saying he's making the talk.
Can he actually walk the talk?
That's exactly the question. And the way you prove that you are willing to walk the talk is if you start to take practical measures. Yes, I will give him credit for everything that he has been saying since he has come to power. Mm. He talked about national unity. He talked about forgiveness. He talked about, you know, avoiding retribution and things of that sort, which is well and good. He talked about his rights. He talked about you cannot have a society without a democracy, which is fine. Can he show us that he meant business by taking specific actions.
So on that note, time is not our best ally right now. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. Ethiopia is Africa's second most populated country, and it is forecasted to be the fastest growing economy in sub-Saharan Africa in 2018. That's according to the International Monetary Fund. However, in recent years, the country has experienced massive anti-government political unrest in the Oromia region. As a result, the country is currently under a state of emergency. According to human rights groups, the government has suppressed basic rights and freedoms, and so this leads us to our question of the week, in which we asked, what should the Ethiopian government do to promote unity in the country? We'll start off here with a tweet from Kwikiriza Habert, who writes, the government should fight tribalism in all sectors and make people equal. We have another tweet here from Baye Hailu, who writes, scrap the so-called anti-terrorism law, free all political prisoners, respect freedom of expression, uphold the rule of law, bring mass killers to justice, compensate all political prisoners, arrange a free and fair election in 2 years' time. Here now our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Oburoba Obibini Kwasi Amoafu Kodwa from Ghana. And he writes, I commend Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's effective reform approach, which is already improving unity and peace in and around Ethiopia. I want his government to ensure equality, political inclusivity, youth employment and entrepreneurship in order to avoid an immigration crisis amongst its youth. Let's go here to another comment from Facebook fan Bitunguramia Levikato from Uganda. He writes, the Ethiopian government should look for the core source of demonstrations in the country and look for lasting solutions. Our last Facebook comment comes from Martin Kananura from, and he writes, I think unity is all about allocating resources equally, fight against nepotism, and solving the country's unemployment problem. Now, of course, we always appreciate all of your audience feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. To comment on our Facebook page, just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. You can join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and of course, follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page that is on our website. And you can watch us live on your mobile device. Download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what is ahead on next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we look at the heroic rescue of a child by a migrant from Mali and examine the forces that pushed him out of Africa and into Europe. At least a million sub-Saharan Africans moved to Europe since 2010, and the flow continues. What are the factors that propel people to leave their country? And why is Europe such an alluring destination? In search of a better future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
And that is all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and your guests, of course, have a lot of social media comments to discuss, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Thanks, Heidi. And our topic, of course, for today is a discussion and analysis on the challenges and opportunities regarding the political transition in Ethiopia. And our distinguished guests are Solomon Abate, VOA's Horn of Africa reporter, and Professor Burhan Nega, chairman of the Patriotic Green Board 7, and Skida Nega, an Ethiopian independent journalist, was expected to join us, but he has not yet showed up. On a programming note, we requested the Ethiopian ambassador to the United States to participate in today's program, but due to scheduling conflicts, he was not able to join us. Well, I have to say again that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka. As always.
You're most welcome. And I have to say, I have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers, and I've just learned that we do have Ambassador Herman Cohen. Ambassador Herman Cohen himself is a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. He also, by the way, had a very, very key role to play back in 1991. And he probably has some very interesting ideas, especially to tell us how to get away from where we are right now. Good afternoon, Ambassador Cohen.
Good afternoon, Shaka.
How are you? How have you been? It's a very long time since you came on the show.
I'm feeling fine, thank you. I'm enjoying everything so far.
I like that. What is your question or comment?
Well, my comment is that we should take note of two things that happened in the last year. One, the angry people started to attack foreign investments in Ethiopia. That meant that Ethiopia stopped being an interesting destination for foreign investors. This is unfortunate because Ethiopia normally is one of the most interesting places for foreign investors. Secondly, the American embassy in Addis started to become very critical. This is very unusual.
Ambassador Cohen, do you have your television set on?
Set is on, yes, I'm talking on my phone.
Do you have your television set on?
Yes.
Yes, because if you do, please, could you touch it off?
Okay, I'll do that.
Or the computer, because we are basically getting feedback on the line. Technical problem. In the meantime, let me come back to you.
Looks better.
Talk to me now. What about the evidence that you are getting on the ground? How are the ordinary people feeling, other than the fact that each time some of these prisoners are released, you see celebrations around?
Yeah. There are thousands of prisoners released over the past 3 months, in fact, including the ones who were released yesterday. So, as we said earlier, there is hope on the ground. There is a research report done by a non-governmental organization based in Ethiopia, which is called WAAS International. Mm-hmm. And it gauged, you know, the feeling of the people recently. And 84%, according to that report, 84% of Ethiopians have a positive thinking about the new prime minister. And about 88% are very much optimistic that he would bring about change.
Afrobarometer?
It's not Afrobarometer. Afrobarometer is a little bigger and a different organization. But this one is just an organization that conducts census and research.
People are very optimistic.
People are very optimistic. 88% of Ethiopians think that the new prime minister would bring about some good changes to the country. And that doesn't mean everything is positive in the country. There is some kind the benign kind of opposition and skepticism still.
But they're optimistic.
But they're optimistic in general. You know, now I think the dark time has gone. You know, it is clearing now these days, as we see from the ground. Opposition parties, serious opposition parties like Gumboot 7, started calling the ruling party by its natural name, as EPRDF, which they never did.
They never did.
Yeah, they used to call that party or label that party as it labels them as a terrorist.
Very interesting.
They labeled the coalition as Weyane, in general. You know, so after one dominant party within the coalition, but these days they started calling EPRDF as EPRDF. This is one thing, and the other thing is there are some people who think it is too premature to judge the prime minister that he is walking the talk.
Talking the talk, but...
Talking the talk.
Without probably...
They say it is... He has been there for 50 days or 50-something days only. But still, the pressure is on.
I see. I understand that Ambassador Herman Cohen might probably be in a position to pick up from where he left. Good afternoon, Ambassador Cohen. Good afternoon, Ambassador Cohen. I cannot hear him.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, well, what I was saying is that the actions of the previous government were starting to discourage foreign investment. Some of the angry people were starting to destroy foreign property. And this is unacceptable. And foreign investment was starting to dry up. Secondly, the American embassy was starting to become very angry as well. And as Ethiopia's best friend, were giving them advice that they had gone too far and they needed to start a reform program. And I believe that the current prime minister got the message and that he's doing all the right things. So I am optimistic.
I cannot...
That's it. The line is breaking.
Yeah, I think the...
So I think he's expressing his optimism
You
know, by the situation.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
I have here one. Are you done, Ambassador?
Yes, I am.
I see. Okay. I understand that we also have another caller from Dallas, Texas. Good afternoon, Ms. Gashau. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Thanks to God. I'm okay. How are you, my brother?
It's a very, very long time, my sister. I can only see a very, very incredibly gorgeous, beautiful picture of yours.
Thank you. I'd like to thank God for this opportunity I have. And I would like to also say hello to my brother. I don't know if you can remember that and brother Mona Bata, and all stay talking to our family there. Well, my comment is different from what I heard up to this point. First of all, my appreciation goes to the United States government for helping the all the prisoners to this point. Hopefully, those of the prisoners will be probably 15,000 this season. Hopefully, they will be released shortly. By the way, there's April anyway. I don't know. I hear my. For regard to Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, yes, so far, just like Dr. Mohamed has said, so far he has been humble, he has been really promoting unity and peace. But let me say this, the most important thing is to remove the so-called Article 39, where a border, just like an issue, a border design based on ethnic group. So no matter what, you know, trying to say in terms of peace and reform, unless that based on the ethnic, you know, the ethnic apartheid is removed, there will not be any change. All change that we see in Ethiopia, the political parties, you know, like the oil exchange party in Ethiopia, or the more democracy front, whatever they call it, all that, we need to watch. It's not really about the group. This group don't really believe, and they don't want the segregation, the Article 39 to be removed. They don't want the Article 39 to be abolished.
I see.
So until then, you know, we need to organize ourselves. We have friends. The United States of America is the friend of the African continent as well as Ethiopia. But we must be organized ourselves in order to be successful.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Yeroka Gashaw. I think that your point is well taken. We gather that we do have another telephone caller from the Republic of Ghana. Good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
How are you?
By the grace of Allah, I'm doing well.
It is incredible that the telephone line from Accra
is much better than
the one from Washington and Dallas.
Yes, Shaka, we are doing well, the nation here. And let me use your platform also to wish all the Muslims across Africa who are watching you, listening to your wonderful program, wish this fasting Mubarak. Shaka, I have two quick questions about the issue regarding the Ethiopia. First and foremost, I have to congratulate the young leader. But my question is that, Shaka, can he able to transform take some of the chunk of the resources that few elite of Ethiopians who are enjoying, and the majority who are not getting from that kind of resources? So I want to know whether we have that seat to buy, to able to help them economically. Because we are talking about unity, uniting the people. You cannot unite the people when the majority sit down for few people alone enjoying national state. So how is he going to make sure that the majority of Ethiopians who fought hard for him to come to power also get some of the resources that few elite of Ethiopians are enjoying? That is my question. Thank you very much, Kaka.
You're most welcome. It's been a long time, of course, since I heard your beautiful voice all the way from the land of the Osagyefo. Let me come to you, Professor Nega, immediately. You have heard, of course, what Ambassador Cohen said what Ms. Gashau said and Tafa. What is your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction is brief. I think Ambassador Cohen knows very well. I mean, he was very, very optimistic in 1991 also when the change took place.
1991, right? He chaired...
We had, you know, Ethiopia is one of those unique African countries that had two revolutions in 50 years, two fundamental revolutions. Both of them started with a very hopeful expectation about the future. Both of them were disappointing even compared to the past. We have destroyed the basic fabric of the society in the name of whether it is radical revolution or, you know, the typical Stalinist ethnic dispensation that this new regime came. You know, in 1991, Meles and his group not only legalized, but it legitimized ethnic-based politics, the only country in the continent who openly advocated and accepted ethnicity as a base of national politics.
Almost borrowing, really, a leaf from apartheid South Africa.
Yeah, exactly. So
the Bantustan
model. So we have started with hopeful movements, very radical movements, 74, 91, and our hopes were dashed. So I'm just stating to Ambassador Cohen, we need to get there before we become very excited. In fact, that's why we're saying what we need to do is learn from these lessons of these past two revolutions, make sure we don't repeat those mistakes, make sure that nobody knows for a society more than the free decision of the people. Let's make sure that the institutions necessary to dispense this kind of democratic politics are there before we become too hopeful. Yes, you know, as I said, you know, there are a number of positive things that Abiy is doing. We hope he has learned from the past revolutions. We hope he has learned from not just Abiy, Lemma, and the whole crew of reformists, that they have learned that there is no a priori knowledge about what is the best thing in society.
What about U.S. policy? I mean, you can go beyond Ambassador Haman Cohen. I mean, you remember that during the Clinton administration, Meles Zedawi was identified as one of those who happened to be, at least in their foreign policy, the beacon of hope for African democracy.
Well, not only
they
that,
were considered
not
as new blood,
the not new only the new leaders,
the new breed,
you know,
of African
Kagame,
leaders.
Museveni, and, but not only that, you have to understand that when you talk about U.S. foreign policy, you don't know which U.S. foreign policy you are talking about, at what time, which administration, on the basis of what. I mean, we all know about Obama. We lived in the United States. Here is Obama, who would go to Addis Ababa and declare the government a democratically elected government when everybody in the world, including him,
because his
knows that it is not.
Because so, his national security advisor, Dr. Susan Wright, had characterized Ethiopian democracy as 100 democratic.
No, but she was laughing when she said it was 100% democratic.
But so what?
It is, I mean, to a certain degree, what all this is showing me is I don't know whether they really believe we deserve democracy as Africans. I really am not sure sometimes whether they really believe that we are as human as they are, that we have all these needs of freedom and respect for our rights, the way they fight for their own. And that has made U.S. policy a little bit, you know, suspect in terms of the degree to which it is committed. So, but this is not the business of the United States. This is our business.
The business of Ethiopians, the business of Africans.
The business of Africans.
Not expecting democratic manna from heaven.
Nobody is going to give us that. We need, I mean, Ethiopians fought for it. I think they are driving the society towards that. I think the Abiy Lemma group is realizing this and going in that direction. Let's all work together and take it to that next step. Let's make sure that there is no government who a priori knows what people want without actually getting the feedback from the public. And the way you get feedback from the public is through the process of election. Now, if we go there...
Elections which are credible election.
Yeah, credible. Not elections. Free, no. Free and fair election. And as a package, I'm not talking about just elections. I'm talking about the whole package, basic human rights, independence of the judiciary, independence of the media, the security apparatus being independent of any political. All there is a package. You know, you don't need to reinvent the wheel on this. We all know what they are. If we put that on the ground, then civilized our discourse in such a way that we are not looking for the worst aspect of each other, but that we have a mission as a continent, as a country, to get beyond all this terrible situation that we have found ourselves in. We can get there. We are thinking people. It should not be difficult.
So you really haven't changed your mind. The last time you said that the problem of Ethiopia was essentially TPLF and the regime.
And the ideology that they brought to this assumption that they know it all.
So what is the way forward? Because last time you talked about a national dialogue. And this is an idea, by the way, that is also embraced by Ms. Yeherawa Gachau.
No, this is exactly what we have been calling for. If this historical moment is about establishing a meaningful political order for the future of the country, it needs a buy-in from the different political forces. We need to agree on what the rules of the game are. We need to have a dialogue at the national level. Here are the rules of the game. This is by these rules that we all play equally.
But what sort of national dialogue are you talking about? Are you talking about the type that has sovereign status, like the one that happened in Benin back in 1991 under dictator Mathieu Karekou?
No. We are talking about bringing all the different political organizations, those who have raised arms to fight against injustice in that country and to fight for democracy, those who are political organizations inside the country, civic society organizations. Let's have a dialogue about what would be the best political arrangement for our future, collectively, so that we have basic understanding about what the rules of the game would be in the future, and we all play by it, unless otherwise you have a buy-in. Insofar as people feel that they are marginalized, they are not in the table, then you are going to have a problem. You know, at the end of the day, election is about credibility. At the end of the day, democracy is about credibility. People have to feel, even the losers of an election have to feel, at least the process was fair and reasonable.
They have to feel as if, in fact, they have a sort of ownership.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why we say there is an important need for dialogue.
30 seconds.
Okay, just I have one brief question to Dr. Berhanu. You know, in spite of the fact that we mentioned some of the problems and there are some others we didn't mention here, starting from corruption, the release of prisoners, abolishing the state of emergency and repressive laws, you sounded supportive of
Mind
the
you,
Prime
Time
Minister.
Is not your best ally. Really?
Uh-huh. So can I pose my question to him or where?
Time happens not to be our best ally because, again, like I said...
I will respond to him
no
in
democracy
private when we leave.
In Studio 47, you can only have or enjoy democracy as long as the producer is on your side. Well,
yeah.
On that note, our distinguished guests are Solomon Abate, Professor Berhanu Nega, and Iskinder Nega did not show up. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Abate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Ethiopia. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.